I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. In 1972, when Howard and Mary White published the first edition of Rain Coast Chronicles, they wanted the publication to, quote, put BC character on the record. Since then, the unclassifiable journal / serial has been filled with stories of this coast, of its history and folklore, of its poetry, of its lighthouses, fishermen, and First Nations. These books have been bestsellers, and Rain Coast Chronicles 23 has just been published. It's a good one. It's a double issue, and it brings together 30 pieces celebrating the 40th anniversary of Harbor Publishing. The publishing house that Howard and Mary founded first published a book in 1974, and this new book is a marvelous sketch of the past 41 years of Harbor. You have fine pieces by great BC writers and personalities of folks like Al Purdy, Stephen Hume, Grant Lawrence, Edith Iglauer, Frank White, Eric Nickel, Helen Piddington, Mike McArdle, James Barber, Ann Cameron, and many, many others. Peter A. Robson edited this edition, and he joins me now to talk about what's in this book, Harbor's 40 years and his own years of association with Harbor, as well as what's represented by this work that this terrific publishing house puts out season after season. Peter Robson has authored hundreds of articles and has served as editor for several magazines, including Pacific Yachting, Cottage, and Cottage Life West. He's authored and co-authored a number of books. His website is at peterarobson.com. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Peter Robson. Mr. Robson, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks for joining us. So where are you today?
I'm in Nanaimo.
Ah, so you live in Garden Bay, is that right?
That's correct, yes. And we're currently on tour with the book for several cities on Vancouver Island.
Yeah, so I mean, it must be great fun for you to get to see these places that Harbor has written, you know, has published about for years.
Yes, it's certainly good to revisit them. I spent a lot of time traveling the coast when I was freelance writing about tugboats and commercial fish boats and logging. So I've been to a lot of these places, and but it's always fun to revisit them.
Garden Bay, for people not knowing where that is, that's on this. I'm in Vancouver, so my point of reference is the mainland. I guess it's on the mainland side, just north of, say, Vancouver, right?
Yeah, people quite often mistakenly assume it's on an island because you'd have to take a ferry to get there from Horseshoe Bay. But it is on the mainland. There's just no road that goes along, of course. And yes, you take the ferry to Langdale, and you get to Gibson's, and you drive up through Seashelt and up to the Pender Harbor area, and Garden Bay is part of Pender Harbor.
Yeah, and so it's on the other side, I guess, of Madeira Park, where Harbor's based. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. It's a pretty convoluted system of waterways in Pender Harbor and Names. It's far easier to get around by boat, actually, than it is by car.
Yeah, but you grew up in Vancouver, if I recall.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
I grew up here, born here and grew up here, and I moved to Pender Harbor back in 1995 to work for Howard White. A much sought-after job I was so pleased to have.
Yeah. And living up there, because I've just read about, say, that part of the world through books that I've read from Harbor and the sort, it must be not only a beautiful place, but is it a nice place to live in?
Oh, it's a wonderful place. We've got a couple of acres there surrounded by forest and overlooking one of the lakes here. It's just it's a very beautiful spot. It's a small community. Everybody's friendly. Everybody's sort of on the same page about enjoying the recreational opportunities, the outdoors, and of course the salt water and fresh water.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned that you moved there in 95 to work for Harbor. Just for people listening who might not be familiar with Harbor Publishing, and I'm curious to know why they wouldn't, but what has this house, the Harbor Publishing, what has that meant for British Columbia?
Oh, I think it opened up a whole new, venue or whole new style of writing that people would actually like. It seems to me that all the history we traditionally read when we were growing up was this very dry stuff, mostly about Canadian history and details, but there was no real color to it. And I think Harbor, Howard somehow stumbled on this this great idea about bringing to life all these, bringing to life history, talking to the loggers, telling the stories of loggers, as opposed to the history of the logging industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of stuff, the same with commercial fishing, going out with the fishermen. And this was something that nobody had really done before. And he found out that that people love this. And that's, I think, if people hadn't have really felt a need for that or a want for that, he would never be in business today. But it certainly struck a chord with coastal people, coastal British Columbians, and the say Rankle's Chronicles was always a perennial bestseller.
Yeah, and it's how we view ourselves as British Columbians, but how people from outside of British Columbia, Canadians and international folks, view us, isn't it?
Yeah. I used to travel around a lot on boats, as I mentioned, in tugboats writing stories, and I was able to capture those people's experiences in writing for magazines, what it was like to be on a fish boat with guys for a week, up an old dogging camp in the middle of the bush. And this is sort of quite similar to what Harbour was writing, so it was a good mesh when both of us started working together.
Yeah, so in the 40 years since its inception, Harbour has published something like 600 books, is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, and so was it your job to go through all of them to find pieces for number 23 of Raincoat Chronicles?
Yeah, we had some parameters that we wanted to deal with. They had to be published, Harbour published books. They had to be about the coast. They had to be excerptable, which not all books were acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Excerptable.
Yeah.
We had to take a good balance to sort of capture the color and the flavor of what Harbour Publishing's been doing over the past 40 years.
Yeah, and you look at the pieces in the book, and you just look at the contributors' names, for example, and I rattled some of them off the top of our chat here. There's some terrific writers, you know, and a lot of these books that these pieces are from have won awards. They've been bestsellers themselves. I mean, it must have just been a great fun for you to read all this stuff again.
Yeah, it was. It was. I worked on probably 200 of those books while I was working with Howard and Mary for, I guess it was about 7 years, starting in 1995. So I was familiar with a lot of them, and I'd read a lot before I started at Harbour because it was a genre that interested me. It was just really fun to be able to revisit, sort of a walk down memory lane of all these old books, and you start realizing, boy, these books were really good, and they're still really good,
yeah.
Even though we haven't thought about them for many years.
Yeah, a lot of the pieces stand up, don't they?
Yes, they sure do, yeah.
Do you have a sense of how BC has changed in the 40 years since Harbour started?
Well, I think as far as publishing goes, I think a lot of other publishers realized that, hey, this is actually this is actually working for Harbour. We should be doing the same thing. And I think a lot of publishers realized that this was something that they should be jumping on the bandwagon with, this type of writing.
Yeah, and because there's a certain I don't know how to like put my finger on it, but you know, a lot of people make jokes about some of the books that Harbour publishes, but beyond that, there's a certain spirit of BC that's unique in the sort of writers and the sort of portrayals that happen in the books that Harbour publishes, and you get a sense of what BC really is.
Yes, that's correct. It certainly isn't a Toronto mindset in the publishing out here. This is, I don't think Toronto publishers would be interested in that kind of history at all for Ontario, but certainly it works out here.
Well, working there at Harbour as you did in the time that you spent there, did you get a sense that you and the folks there were doing important work, that you felt that the books you were publishing were going to, say, stand the test of time, if you will?
I'm not sure about that. They were just good books, good reads, and some of them were important for what they documented, some of the history that they documented colorfully, right?
Yeah.
about British Columbia. Certainly the Encyclopedia of British Columbia, I was the production manager for that, and books like Raincoast Place Names by Andrew Scott, many, many books that really became the sort of the standard reference.
Yeah, those books, I mean, you go into a library nowadays here in Vancouver, and I mean, those books are always there. You know, those are books that people refer to all the time.
Yes, that's right, yes.
You were involved in The Sea Among Us, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I was the project coordinator for that book. So that involved taking the manuscript from the authors that had compiled it and the two editors, Dick Beamish and Sandy McFarlane, and sort of crafting it and twisting it a little bit and doing some modifications and gathering pictures and just turning it from a manuscript into the really quite pretty book that it is now.
Yeah, I mean, it's not only a handsome book and it's such a marvelous resource. It's done well for itself, winning prizes, and it's sold quite well, hasn't it?
Yes, we were quite surprised. We knew that it was going to be sort of become the standard reference for everything about the Strait of Georgia, all the science we know about the Strait of Georgia, and it certainly did that, but we didn't realize there was going to be such a broad appeal for the book, and of course we're quite delighted that it won the Roderick Haig Brown Prize for Best Book About British Columbia last year.
When you look back at the pieces in Raincoast Chronicles 23, you realize as well just what a unique place we live in, where you live there in Pender Harbor and where I live in Vancouver. I mean, it for either of us, I would think it's not a place we'd trade for anywhere else.
Yeah, that's correct. I kind of laugh. We were Stephen Hume was talking the other day, the other night at one of the launch events in Victoria, and he was sort of one of his stories was about the simple joy of rain, and he was saying how he never thinks about going to Mexico or Hawaii or anything like that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with our beautiful wet coast. So what if it's wet? It's still an amazing place to live. And I keep thinking that. I go off on the vacation sometimes into these beautiful tropical countries, and I come back and thinking, you know, they're not any better than this. This is the place I really want to be, as opposed to those countries, even though they're beautiful and warm and don't have much rain.
Yeah. I was in New York last month, and I took the train up and down the Hudson River a few times, and there was, you know, it's a beautiful part of the United States. It's you know, it's a not a bad river and the surrounding area, but it's nothing like the Strait of Georgia.
Yeah, this has got it's just so beautiful in so many ways. I think it's something about the temperate rainforest. I think that, you know, there's not much of it left, and we're lucky to live in the middle of the temperate rainforest. And I hope everybody out there appreciates that living here, because I think it's probably the best spot to live in Canada and probably in North America.
Yeah, and back to Raincoast Chronicles 23. There is a number of pieces of poetry throughout the book, and that's been an important part of Harbor's 40 years, hasn't it?
Yes, it has, and it got a lot of poets established in Raincoast Chronicles, because poets that didn't have a whole book's worth, or they weren't sure whether the poetry was interesting enough, published it in Raincoast Chronicles. And I'm thinking of Peter Trower initially here, who was a logger and, you know, started penciling some poems and sort of got discovered through Raincoast Chronicles.
Did you, in the course of putting this together, did you talk to the authors themselves? I mean, some of them are no longer with us, some of them have died, but the ones that are living, do you talk to them in the course of editing this collection?
Yeah, we talked to everybody and told them what we were doing and told them, you know, this is what we thought was a great excerpt, and would it be okay? Is that with, you know, with them? Some of them we said, listen, we really want to excerpt something from your book. It's lots of great material. What would you suggest? So we back and forth a little bit on that kind of material. And, of course, when it came to gathering photographs and stuff, we had to try to dig all those ones up against out of the archives.
Yeah, and did any of them say how they felt in terms of being part of this collection? I mean, did any of them think, say, it was an honor?
Yes. Everybody said that. Everybody thought it was quite an honor to be published in Raincoast Chronicles. I think everybody was quite thrilled to be in it, because they know that Raincoast Chronicles is such a sort of a historic document, I guess.
Yeah, another aspect of this part of the world in which we live, you and I, Peter, is the food. And there are recipes in this book as well. There's a thing for oyster stew and clam chowder. I understand you worked with James Barber as well while you were at Harbor. Is that right?
Yes. Well, I first worked with James Barber at Pacific Yachting when I was the editor there.
Uh-huh.
He became our galley columnist, and we were totally thrilled. This was back in the mid-90s, to actually get this great man, James Barber, writing our monthly column on simple foods that you could prepare on a boat. Subsequent to that, he started publishing with Harbor Publishing. So it was I'd known him before that, and it was just a real treat to work with such this guy who'd been part of a fixture of, I guess, all our anybody who watched TV saw James, and he was one of the first TV chefs, reality TV chefs. So.
Yeah. He was such an entertaining person to watch on television, and in later years when I'd read the books that he'd put out with Harbor, I mean, you read a book, and that's his voice there, and I'm sure you worked with him in terms of editing. That was him, right, on the page?
Yep, it was. It was so him, and it was interesting. I went to his, I guess you'd call it a celebration life, after he died at a Chinese restaurant, and he had picked out the menu ahead of time, and I think he really wanted to. It was really an interesting menu because of all the food that you sort of had to dig into with your hands and get all greasy and stuff. And it was kind of like you smiling down on us from above and saying, "Okay, guys, get your hands into it."
Yeah. Well, is there a piece in this book that we ought to read right away when we pick this up?
Well, you know, one of the pieces that struck me the most in there is a piece from the book called Nikkei Fisherman.
Yes.
And that was from a book about the Japanese fishermen in British Columbia. And there was a point in there that the story we excerpted was what it was like for the Japanese fishermen that were working at home and suddenly got told to jump on their boats and take them to a place where they were going to be seized. Then ended up having to spend a week or two aboard their boats in the middle of winter, delivering them back to Vancouver in convoys with no food, no oil, just a miserable treatment. And they get there, and they have to give up their boats, and they sort of holding up their hands and going, "Well, what do we do now? We've just lost our livelihoods. We can't make a living. We're hooped."
Yeah.
And it was really a powerful portrayal because it was in the words of the Japanese people that were affected by this. The fishermen.
Yeah, and it's such a vital part of our history that we really are discredited for not remembering it, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think everybody's heard about it, but to get the actual feel of it, this was the book that brought out the feel of what it was really like.
Yeah, well, was this fun to put together?
Oh, it was fun. I sort of joked it. If I start admitting that it's fun, that or we may want some of the money back they paid me for it. But it was a real treat to work on it because all these authors were wonderful people, and I knew them all, and it was they were happy to be on here, and it was sort of easy to whittle it down in the end. It actually worked out easily. We started with all these 100 books, and it just sort of came down naturally. It wasn't a struggle to try to find the book, the good balance between photography and stories. You wanted drama, you wanted some history, you wanted great adventure, you wanted great photography, and it just all came together beautifully.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can give us some insight as to how Harbor operates. It seems to me, season after season, it just seems, you know, to grow and grow. I mean, they're doing so well in terms of sales. And the books that they put out year after year, I mean, are quite good. Where do you see it 40 years down the line?
Well, I think Howard would be better to speak to this better to me, but it really bothers me that we've lost our independent bookstores, or most of them. I mean, I really support these independents, but and the larger stores have so much power because they can buy 5,000 copies if they want or not, and it can make a publisher print a ton of these books, figuring that a big company orders all these books, and they decide that they don't actually market them right or they don't sell them, they can return them all back, and the publisher's sort of stuck. There's not many outlets, and a lot of these big stores, it seems, they're going to rather sell merchandise and trinkets and stuff as opposed to, you know, shorten their book list to just the important, just the books that'll sell the most, as opposed to the important books or the books that British Columbians would really like to read.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that's all going to play out in the end. I don't think e-books are going to eliminate the print media at all. Harbor offers a lot of their e-books, and they just don't get people getting them.
Yeah.
I always want a book in my hand, right?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I mean, I'm 33, but I mean, I don't have an e-reader because I just don't want one. I want the book in my hand, like you.
Yeah, same here. Same with magazines. I mean, I like to see that thing, and I think that's people that think that e-books are going to take over the world. I think they're mistaken.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, Peter.
I'm mistaken.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and on this tour, I'm sure you're getting to see a lot of these independent booksellers at various events.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. We have some great people in this province, don't we, that sell books regularly.
And Vancouver Island, I'm really delighted there's so many on Vancouver Island.
Yeah. Peter, it's been such a delight to talk to you. This is a great collection and a great edition of Raincoast Chronicles. Continued good luck with it and congratulations.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
The website for more, peterarobson.com, Raincoast Chronicles 23, marking the 40th anniversary of Harbor Publishing with stories and history of the British Columbia coast, is out now. Get it, because it's such a delightful read. You'll keep it around for a long time because there's stuff in here that you'll just enjoy, and you'll learn about this place if you don't know already. Its editor, Peter A. Robson, joined me on the line from Nanaimo in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.